For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
We're going to start tonight by something maybe a little unprecedented, certainly in my experience. I thought we'd do a little goddess invocation. So the name of my talk tonight, I made it really long so that I would just have all the topics in the title and then I wouldn't forget. And that's all the preparation I did. I came up with the title, I came up with this chant, and then I'm going to wing it. Which seems appropriate in terms of talking about the goddess. So the name of my talk is God Particle versus Goddess Wave, Dark Matter as Dark Mother, Zazen as Devotion to Prajnaparamita, Mother of Buddhas. So before I get into that, I thought we'd go ahead and do this chant. And during Zazen, I actually had a thought that I'd like to dedicate this to a friend of my wife and I's, Mark Aguilar. Is that right, Rach? He's more of a friend of Rachel's, a fellow artist, a transgendered individual who recently took his own life. Very young. So, let's maybe keep her in mind a little bit, and maybe any other suffering beings that you know who maybe suffer from the denigration of the feminine as has manifested in our civilization for a very long time, but with lots of signs of renewal and regeneration. So that's in that spirit I'd like for us to do this. So my wife and I like sometimes to watch music videos in bed on our computer. I make her suffer through lots of 80s new wave videos from England, and she makes me suffer through the 90s, which I blissfully miss most of in a Zen monastery in California. So I've been catching up. So of course I was aware of Tori Amos, but I've been having a sort of personal encounter with goddess energy. You could say the archetype, the goddess archetype, but that feels very incomplete to me. It feels too abstract. And my experience is not abstract at all. And I don't think our experience of the goddess really is all that abstract either. So this particular Tori Amos song really stuck with me, and she's just been blowing my mind as an obvious and transparent messenger of the goddess, priestess, with lots of esoteric messages in her music. Maybe some of you are familiar with it. I've always appreciated her, but it's kind of at a different level. So this tune I got from her, I was listening to it today, and it came to me, and so I sort of cobbled together this chant. It just sort of fell together very easily. So I'll sing it, and then we'll sing it together 9 times, and you'll get the hang of it. And if you're particularly chorally adept and you want to like harmonize, like I'm sure the goddess would love that. I would love that. But, you know, follow along with what you can, and I will try. I'm not a singer, so I'm going to do some of this. Okay. Isis, Venus, Mary, Devi, Dark Hecate, Mother Tao, Sarasvati and Shekinah, Sweet Demeter, Kalima, Fierce Inanna, Red Yogini, Mother Prajna, Lakshmi Ji, Basket Weaver, Bluest Gaia, Spider Woman, Kanzeon. And then we'll start at the beginning. Okay? So I'll count it in and then just watch my clue and we'll give it a shot. Isis, Venus, Mary, Devi, Dark Hecate, Mother Tao, Sarasvati, and Shekinah, Sweet Demeter, Kalima,
Tirsitana, Purana Yogini, Mother Prajna, Lakshmi, Basket Weaver, Louis Gaia, Spider Woman, Kanzeon, Isis Venus, Mary Devi, Dark Akate, Mother Tao, Sarasvati, and Shakina, Sweet Demeter, Kalima, Virsinana, Red Yogini, Mother Prajna, Lashmiji, Basket Weaver, Louis Gaia, Spider Woman, Akansayam. Isis Venus, Mary Devi, Dark Hecate, Mother Tao, Sarasvati, and Shekina, Sweet Demeter, Kalima, Virsinana, Red Yogini, Mother Prajna, Lakshmi, Basket Weaver, Louis Gaia, Spider Woman, Sarasvati Venus, Mary Devi, Dark Hecate, Mother Tao, Sarasvati, and Shekina, Sweet Demeter, Kalima, Virsinana, Red Yogini, Mother Prajna, Lakshmi, Basket Weaver, Louis Gaia, Spider Woman, Kanzeon. Isis Venus, Mary Devi, Dark Hecate, Mother Tao, Sarasvati, and Shekina, Sweet Demeter, Kalima, Virsinana, Red Yogini, Mother Prajna, Lakshmi, Basket Weaver, Louis Gaia, Spider Woman, Kanzeon. Isis Venus, Mary Devi, Dark Hecate, Mother Tao, Sarasvati, and Shekina, Sweet Demeter, Kalima, Virsinana, Red Yogini, Mother Prajna, Lakshmi, Basket Weaver, Louis Gaia, Spider Woman, Kanzeon.
Last one.
Isis Venus, Mary Devi, Dark Hecate, Mother Tao, Sarasvati, and Shekina, Sweet Demeter, Kalima, Virsinana, Red Yogini, Mother Prajna, Lakshmi, Basket Weaver, Louis Gaia, Spider Woman,
oh my. Thanks, everybody. That was nice. You'll notice on the other side there's a nice picture. You can turn over and she can stare at you through this talk. I'd be perfectly happy to leave it at that and not defile the mother's purity with more blather. Singing is much better, but in silence is nice too. But talking's good too, so that's what we do. That's what you paid for. So, well, I guess I'll start with this picture. So, I recently, just a week and a half ago, I guess, almost 2 weeks, had the privilege to give a tour to Joanna Macy, a visiting teacher who was recently here, and our teacher Taigen, is really, I think, one of the highlights of my life. Actually, I really enjoyed that. That was a life-changing, life-transforming experience for me. And after I was done, I went to visit a friend who was teaching at the Art Institute, at the School of the Art Institute, and afterwards, I just I kind of put a call out to this goddess energy that I've been connecting with, and, you know, what do I need to see? What do I need to go look at? So I went to the Asian, I was drawn to the Asian art section, and I had just that morning been looking at statues of Prajnaparamita, and I saw this kind of out of the corner of my eye, and it just called to me. It was like, that's the thing you need to go look at. It was just this head. I've never looked at it before, which is funny because I've spent a lot of time in the Asian collections and thought I'd looked at most everything, and this had never struck me. It's about this big, sort of over in a dark corner. And I went over and looked at it, and it was just so beautiful, and I was admiring it. And then I looked at the tag, and it said, Buddhist deity, likely Prajnaparamita. So this is the world of sort of the goddess energy of feminine reality. You know, you start to tune in to the goddess wavelength that we'll talk about in a second. And you start to find that there's signs, and she's sending you messages all the time. Maybe you notice you get up in the morning and you have a song lyric in your head, or a song, you know. I've been having that happen a lot. I just hear the music, and then I actually go, well, what's that radio station playing? And I listen, and it'll just be one line from a song, but it'll be really important. Like, that one line will be a really important lesson. Kind of put in this little, Germans have a phrase, earworm is the translation. When you get a song stuck in your head, but I don't know, these little earworms, they kind of find their way out of our brains into our consciousness. So let's take the first of my many titles for this talk. God particle versus goddess wave. And Nyozon spoke about this yesterday, the recent discovery of the Higgs boson, that they built this gigantic multi-kabillion-dollar apparatus to discover this thing. And Nyozon was saying that now it may be useless. Now they've discovered this thing, this super collider in Europe that they built, may be no longer useful. And there's a lot of excitement about this God particle. It sort of seems like the latest iteration of a, you know, millennia-long search for the ultimate thing that's going to somehow... Anybody ever read the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? They ask for the meaning of the universe, and the response is, this giant supercomputer gives them the response, 42. It's kind of like that. So we got the Higgs boson, but it's kind of like having the number 42 for your answer. Now, they're saying it's going to be all kinds of scientific breakthroughs and new technologies that will come from this. But I think we're missing what's not getting as much attention is the mind-blowing discovery of dark matter. So I don't know if you've heard much about this. I am not a physicist. I'm an artist. I don't even like to read too much about it. I read the story, kind of get a flavor for it, and that's often enough for me. But it's kind of fascinating, this discovery that potentially, it started as like 10%. They started to discover there's something out there. There's something in here that we don't see, but that is affecting us. And then the number went up to like 25%, and then 50%. And now it's like up 75, 80, 90%. They're saying it might go to like 99% of the universe is dark matter. What that is a profound mystery. And the only way we know it exists is because it bends light through time and space. And the weird movements of light through time and other frequencies, you know, light at all of its frequencies, these radio waves, the weird behavior that they've started, the instruments have gotten so precise that they can now tell that there's a lot of stuff out there that's bending stuff around and moving stuff. So we're at this, as Joanna Macy was teaching us, we're at a great turning historically for our species, for our planet. There's a great turning that is indeed occurring and needs to occur if we're going to have a future. if, as Joanna so eloquently puts it, if our future ancestors, they're relying on us. The future ancestors are calling us to action. And in some cases, inaction. To provide a future for them. And to provide a link for our past ancestors. So we have a responsibility as human beings. And we know that. We feel that. We sense that. And we feel this call to be dutiful to our Mother Earth. And we wonder how we can do that. Well, I think it's interesting, getting to the third line of my title, what I want to talk about is our Zazen practice as a devotional practice to Prajnaparamita, who's often referred to as the mother of the Buddhas. So there's a couple parts to that. We chanted the Heart Sutra tonight, the Prajnaparamita Heart Sutra, and it can seem a little bit abstract, I think. It can seem kind of dry and almost, it's kind of a big negation. And yet it's called the Heart Sutra. So there's a big message just in that. Why is this thing called the Heart Sutra not gushing ecstatically about Prajnaparamita, the mother of the Buddhas? Why is it just saying not that and not that and not that and not that and not that? And I invite you to sit with that question. But I'll talk a little bit about, you know, a certain way to understand it, in, at least in the light of the way I'm thinking about it tonight. So we come to our Zazen practice oftentimes, I think, trying to use it as a tool. And because our entire programming is sort of about acquisition. And our civilization has been built very profoundly and fundamentally towards a posture of acquisition, conquest, dominance, and control. So we can't help but bring that programming. It's deeply wired into our systems, and we're reminded of it all the time. I've become very sensitive lately to media and just noticing. For a long time, it's kind of niggling. Like, I just was so frustrated with it. It just felt like it was infecting my brain. And it's reinforcing a lot of this programming all the time. And it's hard to sort through it. It's throughout our culture. It's a wavelength. It's a vibration that's being sent out. That you are inadequate and you need to consume. And that you need to do and dominate and control in order to reinforce an idea, some idea of safety. It's a sticky wicket, because they create the fear. There's this apparatus, this kind of system that's about sort of generating fear and inadequacy, feelings of fear and inadequacy. Tigan very recently and very, again, eloquently talked about how insidious this is and how unfortunate it is that people are so bent on, so many people are so bent on generating these kinds of feelings of inadequacy and need. And we all know this. That's why we're all here. We all came here for this refuge, to take refuge with each other for just a few minutes. Kind of find some sanity, get some touch ground. And so what is it? What is it that we touch when we come in here and we touch ground? And why is Prajnaparamita called the mother of the Buddhas? And why, when Buddha awakened, as the story says, he looked up and he saw the morning star. Well, what is the morning star but Venus? The morning star is Venus. Mm-hmm. So, Prajnaparamita, what is she? She's radical releasing, radical letting go, remaining upright in the midst of letting go and letting go and letting go. It's truly not about acquisition. So, in, you know, there's a wonderful book, one of my favorite books on Zen, called Opening the Hand of Thought. So we walk around in the world with our ego like a balled fist a lot of the time. Have you noticed that? And this process of letting go, it has many different cycles and spans of time in which it exists. But the most basic one is that we come in here and we sit down with this gift of this gentle, noble posture. And we breathe in and we breathe out. So, you know, I invite you in your practice to even consider, as you're breathing in completely, this is the whole of life. This is the whole of my existence. And this is the whole of my death as you breathe out. It struck me recently that we've had a million breaths, maybe tens of thousands of incomplete breaths in our life, where we didn't fully breathe in and we didn't fully breathe out. And that tension starts to accumulate, and the static of the culture starts to build up. And so we get very charged. And so if you come in, instead of thinking, or go ahead and think that you should be doing something, or you know, you can't fight the mind with the mind. Just go ahead and let whatever is happening happen. But maybe, this is something I'm practicing, come to Zazen as a devotion to your life and to this idea of this great mother. This great mother, this nurturing, generous, giving mother of compassion. Kuan Yin, Kanzeon, is who we have some images of here. She's also called the mother of the Buddhas. So we could have an idea, like the Prajnaparamita Heart Sutra, we could have an idea that somehow the end result is very austere and cool and cold and aloof. I recently had somebody tell me this was their understanding of Buddhism. And I think sometimes it's probably been my understanding of Buddhism. But more and more, I think I find myself tuning into the fact that it looks like this. This is what it looks like when you're really able to let go and trust in emptiness. That's the crazy thing. It's not trusting in something. It's trusting in this fecund, dark Tathagatagarbha, Buddha womb. Out of this, you know, in all of these names that we chanted, you know, Mother Tao, the Tao, the mother of all things, she's radiantly dark. She's not a bright light on the hill. She's a radiant darkness and mystery. So that's another aspect to our practice. There's just this another aspect to the lessons from the mother that it's going to probably subvert your expectations. It's probably going to go in ways that are unforeseen and encourage you to loosen up, because she wants to take your stresses and your fears and your delusions, your misunderstandings. She wants to straighten you out, which really involves kind of twisting you up sometimes. I recently had this prayer also come into my head. Mother, please unravel me. this sense of literal muscles in my body that are very tight and wanting them to just hang loose. You know, it's like Tai Chi. Like these great Taoist practitioners, they really learn how to like hang loose, you know. And that's what we do. That's what we do in this practice. We just sit and we hang loose and we just hang out with it. Another kind of recent surprising signal from the universe to me came, and I went to a bookstore, and I was really drawn to pick up this copy of Lex Hickson's Ramakrishna book. When I was in a monastery years ago, a Zen center in California, we read Lex Hickson's book. He's this wonderful scholar, he's passed away, but a writer. He went through many traditions. So he was initiated in Hindu Vedantic tradition, in a Sufi tradition, in, I don't know, maybe a Native American tradition, and finally, last but not least, Soto Zen. And he wrote a book called Prajnaparamita, Mother of the Buddhas, which I haven't read in many years, and I didn't do any reading about it tonight. I just wanted to speak from my own kind of experience. But he also wrote a book about Ramakrishna. And Ramakrishna was a great Indian saint who sort of revitalized Hinduism, and a lot of the people who encountered him were very influential in Indian independence and nationalism. But he was a great devotee of the mother. And I couldn't figure out, when I bought the book, I couldn't figure out why the heck was I buying the book. It made no sense to me. But I bought The Hobbit. Some like youthful self needed to reread The Hobbit, and I'm very excited about the movie coming out. And some other self bought this Ramakrishna book. I didn't really understand either purchase very well, but I just went with it. And the Ramakrishna book has been incredibly interesting and helpful and inspiring. So I found this poem today. I came across it, and it's very, it's got the flavor of Ramakrishna, who is a devotee to Kali in particular. So speaking of radiant dark mothers, this is a poem to Kali, who in this same kind of paradoxical quality, she's the destroyer, but this is addressed to the blissful mother. So she's the blissful mother as well as the destroyer. So I'll just read this, and then I'll probably be done. Mother, you're always blissful. You charmed destructive Shiva. You dance in your own joy and clap your hands to keep time. O elemental eternal one, your form is empty space, yet the moon adorns your brow. Where did you get your garland of severed heads before the universe came into being? You are the operator, and we nothing but the machines that run by your rule. We stay where you put us and say what you make us say. Cursing you, O destructive one, restless Kamalakanta says, with the sword in your hand, you've slaughtered my faith together with my disbelief. I think we could substitute Prajnaparamita in maybe a fiercer guise, and there are plenty to choose from in the Buddhist pantheon. I added Red Yogini, Vajra Yogini, who's considered also the mother of the Buddhas and the consort to Padmasambhava, the Vajra Guru of the Tibetan tradition. But she's also considered his mother, his consort, but is also his mother and the mother of all awakening. This fierceness, this fierce compassion that we experience in our zazen, it feels kind of fierce, fiercely compassionate sometimes. It can be like being in a furnace. It can also be very blissful. It can also be very boring. So I think I pretty much plugged in every phrase and idea I wanted to there. So maybe we could just open it up for questions now or comments. Thank you very much for your chanting and attention.
Thank you very much, Keizan. I just want to add briefly that I very much appreciate your speaking of this and speaking of the devotion and speaking of the feminine aspect. And this is very much part of our Soto Zen practice, and it's not necessarily so obvious and, you know, it looks like what we're doing, sitting upright, and all of the forms are very kind of stern, but the spirit of this is giving ourselves to something deep, or I don't know what to say, beyond, or, you know, we chant and, you know, make offerings and bow, and opening the hand that wants to hold on to something. So I appreciate you talking about this. And any comments, responses, questions for Kazan? Paul?
I had a question about the... You briefly mentioned the earworm. So I'm wondering how that ties into Prajnaparamita. Because personally, since I was very young, I've had... Every morning that I wake up, I have music loudly in my head to, I'd say, an annoying degree. When I shower, it's there. When I meditate, it's there.
I'm really glad that you mentioned this, because I did want to talk about this, that, you know, one of the primary manifestation that we know as Venus, the goddess of love, but a number of the goddesses here relate directly to that, and she was a very important deity, and by many names throughout Europe, the Middle East, and then of course into Asia, etc. I think one of the most important ways that she appears in our life, our mother, this mother energy. Even that's too abstract. I just want to say, you know, our mother appears in our life. Out of which we've come, she keeps directing us. And it's one of the aspects of our life. Again, this can look like a very austere practice, but it's not all we do. We all have these complex lives. And in them, I hope that we have dancing and music and art and creativity and writing and poetry and all of these manifestations that are, you know, in these Buddhist traditions and these kind of Asian traditions that we're now absorbing, they're full of, you know, look at all these beautiful expressions. It's very aesthetically beautiful in here. There's a reason for that. There's a reason that we're not just in a concrete bunker, you know? That Venus speaks all the time. She's coming through all the time. It's a wavelength. It's like a vibration. And it expresses itself as music, I think. So it's a way to think about it. You know, it's just a way to think about this. So listen, you know. Not with a, you know, you can't grab it all. But the things that you're supposed to know have a funny way of coming into the forefront of consciousness if you're tuning into it. If you're like dialing in your radio to the goddess wavelength, you're going to get confirmations and messages that she's there, and you have support, and there's guidance from this radiant empty mother. There's no there, but she's sending messages. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah, Niyazan.
Well, I was going to comment. I never, you know, thought about the story, you know, that the Night of Buddhist Enlightenment, you know, the Morning Star, quite the context. You put it tonight, but there's the other part of the story, you know, like later in that sequence, it's like he's challenged, Buddha's challenged, I mean, he's challenged, like, what, you know, what gives you the right to sort of make the claims you're making, and goes, you know, mom told me, basically.
Totally, you know, totally, yeah, for sure. Yeah, thank you.
So those of you who don't know, the gesture that Nyesan made is what Buddha did. He touched the earth, and one version of the story is that the earth goddess appeared to confirm, yes, this is a Buddha. So that, there's another goddess. Yes, back there.
I just wanted to say I'm really glad I came tonight, because I'm new here, and I was raised Hindu.
Mm.
Specifically in Shaivism.
Oh, nice.
So I'm familiar with...
Om Kali Ma.
Yeah. So
So I've been trying to figure out, you know, because obviously I like, you know, aspects of Buddhism and aspects of Shaivism, and I've been trying to figure out how to put the two together. And I'm really glad I came today because I didn't realize how kind of closely, you know, Buddhism could integrate the two. So I would like to talk to you later to see, you know, what I could read or anything like that.
Om Namah Shivaya. We just made it. We just made a marriage. That's what happened.
Two things, and I don't think it's over again. The talk's great, but the God particle had a name before. It was the God particle, or was the goddamn particle? Because they couldn't find it. And then the people who were funding the research says we can't call it the goddamn particle. Like, okay, we'll call it the God part. So, but another...
It kind of works either way. Like,
yeah, no,
it's still the same bald fist, you know, right. Goddamn particle. You know, I'm going to get you. You know.
But another thing I was going to say, or ask, I think, especially being a male in this culture, there's definitely, it seems to me like an obvious war on female everything, and I was wondering if you had any ideas of practices or ways of kind of applying medicine to the...
Listen to Tori Amos. I realized through this, I've been realizing, it's just been like the forehead slapping the obvious. I was like, oh my God, I've been like a goddess worshipping human this whole time, and there's been this conflict about it because of the culture sending these mixed signals all the time. I mean, you know, it's like, I like, when I was in high school, I liked to dress nice, and I listened to like Kate Bush, and I had funny hair, and I did it anyway, but you know, I got called faggot a lot, and that hurt my feelings. And that happens in our culture, you know. This, like, dedicating this talk to a teacher like Mark, this, you know, young person who killed herself because of these, the pain of living somewhere on this gender spectrum. There was recently a documentary on PBS about two-spirit people. The native peoples around the world, all indigenous peoples recognize that some people are born with two spirits and or more. But they're recognized and they're honored as gifts, gifted people. So in our culture, you know, we're entering a time when we're seeing more honoring, I mean, of this. And it's wonderful. And it gives us opportunities as heterosexual white men in whatever, you know, it's the spectrum. This is the science, you know, just like science is telling us other things. And social and biological sciences are showing us that gender is a spectrum. And so just what can you do? It's like what I've done in my life is kind of unconsciously, but I've just honored beauty. It's like I said to someone recently when we were talking about the future, you know, it was just this realization that if we don't have art and we don't have beauty, you know, it's like we got to balance the activism. You know, you can't just be angry, shaking our fists, and trying to stop the corporations, you know, and throwing bombs. I mean, we need to stick some flowers and some gun barrels, and, you know, it's not really my bag. I think that ship has sailed, but...
It might turn around.
I'd like to see it again. I'm all for another, like, you know, hippie 2.0 revolution. But... and we're having it. It's happening. But I say go to the art museum. Go, you know, honor beauty. Honor the messages coming through from the goddess all the time. And dance. And, you know, honor your partner. And there's just a million ways you can do it. Just ask. And it'll appear. You know. It's a good question. Thank you. Yeah.
This is maybe a little tangential, but there are a bunch of deities from... the pantheons of Voodoo and the Yoruba religions that could be included, like Erzuli from Voodoo, who's the goddess of creation and destruction.
The whole African thing, it's like, I was aware that it was a giant. I mean, I'll just have to keep building on to it. It could get much longer.
The one I keep thinking of is, I think it's Urumila from the Yorba Pantheon, who is either gender or both or transcends them. Mm-hmm. And of course, they're all worshipped through song and dance, mm-hmm. all of them.
Yeah. Yep. I've been finding myself called to dance a lot lately. So,
Kanzeon is also, you know, female as Guanyin in China, but male in India, kind of androgynous in Japan. You know,
I saw in the Seattle Art Museum there's an image from Gandhara of Kanzeon, and one side, you know, has the classic bodhisattva mustache. Mm-hmm. You know, the other side very thin, and one breast, one, you know, I mean, it's just very interesting.
In the Korean tradition, the Kuan Yins have mustaches. They're feminine, but they actually have mustaches. So, yeah. You know, that's our reality.
It's actually past time to stop, but just briefly, you know, to add to what you said, I really appreciate you bringing this forth for us, and we've been talking for a while. We were talking a little while ago about the war on women that's happening in our politics now and against women's health. So our society is confused. And so just to look at all of this and to be willing to stop. And part of what Zazen does is tenderizes us. We can feel our own rawness and tenderness, and you know it's difficult to stop and sit for 30 or 40 minutes or for a day, as we do sometimes, or whatever, you know, to stop and just feel the depth of what our real experience is and feel the softness of that and be willing to stand up for that firmly. So I appreciate your speaking to us.
Really appreciate the chance.